This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from the Buick Enclave, the finest luxury crossover ever. Visit buick.gm.ca to see that where there's passion, there's beauty.
Come back to the table. Give us a fair deal.
Hi, this is the CBC Comedy Factory Podcast. I am Mike O'Brien, and you are Lawrence from sales. Okay, maybe you're not, but if you are, in fact, named Larry and you work in sales, that introduction just blew your mind. Those sounds you heard off the top are the sounds of the writer's strike currently affecting the U.S. film and television industry. They want respect, which means a share of DVD sales and other new media ventures, and an end to having to write jokes for Kelsey Grammer. Come on, two decades is enough. This week's podcast is all about making a statement in support of fellow writers south of the border. To that end, in a show of solidarity, I won't write any new jokes for this week's podcast. I'm putting my pencil down. Seriously, at CBC, they give us pencils. So while we do have some new comedy material from our regular contributors, I won't be adding anything new. It's about righting the wrongs over the rights of writers. Okay, maybe it's because we've all been sequestered away this week working on a new radio program, and I have about 1 hour to get this podcast done. Yeah, it might be that. So let's get right to Sarah Constable's latest skit. This was prompted by news stories about how our loonie's upward trajectory has a lot more to do with foreign manipulation than homegrown achievement.
Well, gentlemen, token lady, looks like the Canadian dollar continues to climb.
What's it up to now?
$1.09?
$1.10?
I heard rumors of it reaching $1.20.
It won't get that high.
I don't know who's higher, you or the loony.
Well, I don't know who's loonier, you or the high guy.
Who's high?
Who comes to work high?
It was a joke.
This is no time for your lady humor. I know everyone here is enjoying the fact we're beating the Americans right now, but we must think beyond the immediate schadenfreude.
Sir, I'm slightly concerned about the lack of control we have.
How do you mean?
Well, one of the reasons why we're doing so well right now is because China is investing in us rather than the states. Our dollar's worth is predicated entirely on the whim of Chinese business.
Are you telling me our economy is made in China?
Exactly.
Well, it seems to be working out for us. I don't see how it could possibly go wrong.
Mr. Bank President!
Oh, what is it, underage lackey?
They're recalling the Canadian dollar.
Why?
It's covered in lead paint.
What?
What are you saying, that every loony is covered in lead?
No, not every loony.
Oh.
Some are covered in the date rape drug.
But date rape is a bad thing.
There have also been reports of consumers finding traces of benzene, rat poison, and some sort of jelly.
Oh, I don't even like marmalade.
What are we going to do now?
Jump out the window!
Well, Johnson's dead. Anyone else got a suggestion?
We could tie the dollar to the gold standard, invest in Canadian business.
Anyone got a viable suggestion?
Well, the dollar is still high.
Cross-border shopping?
Yes, excellent. I could stock up on pet food and kids' toys. Come on, everybody. We're going to Target!
Yay! Yeah!
One, two, three, four, let's show them what writers are for. There's no jokes in this segue, and it doesn't rhyme. Can you feel the pressure? All you studio chiefs and network execs, can you feel it? Here's Diana Francis, the Google Zeitgel, with all the hottest gaining internet searches of the past week.
I'm the Google Zeitgel, and it's time to find out what hot trends are gassing up the Google search engine. On Friday, the hot search was for the Larry King and Jerry Seinfeld interview. The CNN talk show host accidentally insulted his guest when he couldn't remember how the hit sitcom Seinfeld ended.
They didn't cancel you. You canceled them.
You're not aware of this?
No, I'm asking you.
You think I got canceled? Are you under the impression that I got canceled?
You? Have I hurt you, Jerry?
Gee, Seinfeld, give him a break. Larry King has been married 7 times. He thinks everything gets canceled. Saturday's top search was a sad one. Long-distance runner Ryan Shea collapsed and died during the U.S. Men's Marathon Olympic trials, giving couch potatoes everywhere yet another excuse not to exercise. But the next day, actress Katie Holmes surprised everyone by running the New York Marathon in just over 5 hours, giving couch potatoes everywhere an excuse to watch the marathon on TV. The 26-mile marathon is just part of the training that Holmes will need to reach her ultimate goal, running away from her sham marriage. Monday was all about the Dancing with the Stars tour, which kicks off in December in Seattle. And on November 13th, you can buy the Dancing with the Stars video game made for the Nintendo Wii. Now you can learn how to salsa, foxtrot, and faint just like Marie Osmond. On Tuesday, everyone was searching for Lakshmi Tatma, a 2-year-old Indian girl born with 4 arms and 4 legs. Lakshmi was upbeat before going into surgery to remove the extra limbs, giving her doctors hugs, kisses, and high tens. Wednesday brought us former American Idol contestant Kelly Pickler, who broke down in tears at the Country Music Awards while singing a song about her estranged mother.
I'm in Tennessee.
Expect to see Pickler's mother on an upcoming episode of Jerry Springer called I Abandoned My Baby Girl When She Was 2 Years Old, but now that she's famous and sang a song about me on national television, I think I'll look her up. And finally, the latest hot search is for Aqua Dots. The popular children's toy is being recalled after reports found that the beads contained chemicals that mimic the effect of the date rape drug when swallowed. Children are being advised to watch their apple juice in nightclubs and to not leave their baba unattended. For CBC Radio, I'm Diana Francis, the Google Zeitgal.
Can you imagine a world without film and television writers? Who would wear ball caps and shorts to the office? Who would go back to high school reunions and brag to their fellow nerd friends that they personally wrote that joke on Friends when Ross's juice box exploded in his pocket, and how they almost talked to Jennifer Aniston at the rap party? This is what writers bring to society, people. Picture a world without them. Luckily, we are not in such labor strife north of the border, and so we can count on guys like El Rey and his new political column.
A new study. Yeah, I always open with the most exciting news. A new study says that the richest Canadians pay lower taxes than the poorest Canadians, and this trend is continuing. You can read about this study in my new book, How the World Works. But hey, at least we have a half-decent democracy, unlike our brothers and sisters in Pakistan, who bravely march against the martial law of Prez Pervez, the latest in a long line of Western fair-weather friends. As Benazir Bhutto encourages bigger demonstrations, lots of folks in Pakistan saying, I know you've been away for a while, but we do have TVs, and videos from Burma ain't exactly motivational tapes. But Musharraf isn't nearly as desperate to cling to power as the Canadian Conservatives, who don't need some silly old election to launch an attack ad on Stéphane Dion. Now, I know attacks are considered dirty politics, but what's this all about?
Stéphane Dion needs a higher GST because he's made billions in spending promises with no clear priorities. Something to think about the next time you pay the GST.
Next time you pay the GST. I think they used the cash register sound because they couldn't find this sound effect. Unfortunately, Stéphane Dion isn't the only target. Listen to Mr. Harper just this week.
The great threat in any country is when people who oppose the government don't have legitimate channels of opposition. The consequence of that in the long term will be that the only opposition becomes extremist or even...
Please, sir, is that any way to talk about the Bloc Québécois? But not content to kick poor nebbish Stéphane Dion, the Tories are going after another lame duck target, the toothless Senate.
Welcome to Canada's Senate.
Order! Order!
Unelected. Unaccountable. Stacked with liberals.
Horrible thing. Horrible thing. Liberal. Ebola. Osama. Liberal. Cholesterol. Chinese toys. Liberal.
But I think the Conservatives should be careful. Because one day, the things they're saying about the Liberals one day the liberals might be saying the same things about them. It's all in my new book, How the World Works. For CBC Radio, I'm Al Ray.
John Wing is a Canadian stand-up comic who now lives and works in Los Angeles. If John wrote for an American TV show, he'd be out walking a picket line right now, and thank goodness he isn't, because who wants to spend 8 hours a day walking in a circle behind a guy smoking a cigar? Hey, John didn't get that voice from not smoking. Here's a piece he wrote for a recent episode of Definitely Not the Opera, when that show visited Edmonton, the city of champignon. Yeah, it's true, Edmontonians really love their mushrooms. Here's John Wing Jr. on Edmonton's reputation as a funny city. Funny ha-ha, not funny moose jaw.
This is John Wing reporting from the left coast of America, where Edmonton is rarely mentioned. And if it is, it is rendered with that hateful appendage, Edmonton, Canada. Now, I'm not denying that Edmonton is in Canada, but when spoken of, it should always be Edmonton, Alberta. A great city, smallish but powerful and most important, sure of itself. If you don't count Yellowknife, I've traveled to every major city in Canada, and I've found them all, eventually. For a comedian, they all have their idiosyncratic ways. Ottawa has the smartest audiences, which is not to say that any Canadian audiences are dumb, although some can be silent and a teensy bit tight-assed, although I'm certainly not talking about London, Ontario. St. John's people are the happiest to see you, Halifax second in that category. Torontonians are always in a hurry, Winnipeggers in a hurry to get indoors, etc., etc. Edmonton audiences are, overall, the best in the country, and have been since I started traveling there over 20 years ago. They are there to have fun, and are willing to go off with you on any tangent you might choose. They never judge you, lest they may be judged. Comedy audiences in general are an odd group. They come, pay their money, have a few drinks, and laugh, or not, at the performers. Hamilton audiences drink the most, although it never seems to affect their comedic equilibrium. As one begins to travel and perform a lot, a feel for the audience in a particular city becomes part of the mix. How did I do here last time? Did I bomb? Did I kill? Did they like me? Calgary audiences can be wonderful, but you're never sure if they will be or not. They want their city to be seen as sophisticated and cosmopolitan. They do not like to be called Cowtown. They are so much more than Westerners. They're slightly envious of their counterpart, what with Edmonton being the capital and all those Stanley Cup banners hanging from the ceiling at Rexall Place. They feel they somehow deserve better. People in Edmonton don't care if you make fun of them, although they would prefer if you make fun of Calgary. They are what they are. They have the Fringe Festival, the biggest mall, lots of oil, their hockey and football teams, White Avenue, and of course, Wayne Gretzky. Who could ask for more? Here's a perfect example of what Edmonton means. When the Yuck Yucks Club was in the West Edmonton Mall, there used to be a Saturday night one-nighter between the first and second show in a little town called Wetaskiwin, about 25 miles away. You would do the first show in Edmonton, jump in the car, and head out to this little bar in Wetaskiwin, do a 30 or 40-minute show there, and then zip back to the mall for your late show. The show in Wetaskiwin was always bad. The bar was sparsely filled with serious drinkers, there was no stage, and mostly people just stared at you, occasionally deigning to belch or fart in your general direction. If they laughed, it was such a shock it almost always threw you off. That's what other comedians said anyway. I don't recall ever getting a single laugh in that room. As you drove away, swearing to God and Sonny Jesus you would never do this cruel and unusual gig ever again, your only solace was that you were headed back to Edmonton and a show that would put it right. Perhaps I have a special place in my heart for Edmonton for another reason. In 1987, roughly 20 years ago last month, I was there to do a week at Yuck Yucks, and the middle act was a lady from Portland, Oregon, named Dawn Green. We hit it off, became friends, and then a little more. And I married her 18 years ago. We have two children, and she's still really funny, although she doesn't do comedy professionally anymore. She's a school teacher now. She believes spending all day with a bunch of screaming seven-year-olds is infinitely better than a one-nighter in Wetaskiwin. And she may be right. But I digress. Is Edmonton the funniest city? It could be. Its name, though a bit unusual, isn't as easy to make fun of as, say, Regina or Moose Jaw. Michael J. Fox, Leslie Nielsen, and Tommy Chong were born in Edmonton. Not a bad trifecta. There's no Chinook wind, but so what? Edmontonians like the cold. They like their city, and they don't care if you don't. They are who they are, and if you have a problem with that, why don't you go stick it where the sun don't shine? Which would be, of course, Vancouver. I'm John Wing.
Well, here's hoping the writer's strike ends soon, because labor disputes are never pleasant for the parties involved. So let's reach into our comedy archives back exactly 2 years ago, when we here at CBC were returning to our desks after having lived through our own labor dispute. It's just a memory now, but a 10-week lockout put CBC radio and television into minimal programming and lots of repeats back in the fall of 2005. And when the Comedy Factory folks finally went back to work, they celebrated in satire. Here's one. From the Comedy Vault.
Hi, it's Paul. Paul Martin, the Prime Minister. I just wanted to say how delighted I am on behalf of all Canadians to welcome employees of the CBC back to work. I know how thankful you all must be to have a Liberal government so dedicated to facilitating the agreement. And I hope, in return, I can count on hearing lots of fair and balanced coverage of the current parliament. One hand washes the other, if you catch my drift. So, good luck, and I'll be listening. Really listening.
Hello, it's Brian. On behalf of Ben and Mila and all of the Mulroonies, I'd like to congratulate the CBC and its union on reaching an accord. I'm reminded of the accord that I reached at Meech Lake, the sweetest deal ever known to man. So callously thrown away. Anyways, I could go on and on, but there isn't enough space on your voicemail or paper in the forest to record my many, many accomplishments. All I mean to say is it's good to have Canada's national voice back to keep Canada glued together and not crumbling like she was under Trudeau before I saved her.
Hi, CBC, Stephen Harper calling, leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. I wanted to say congratulations on reaching a deal. Welcome back to work. Canada is richer for having a, we're all edified, but... Okay, no, I can't do it. I know it's good form, but I can't. I mean, what? How do you erase this thing? Damn it!
Hi, David Dingwall here. Welcome back, CBC. I know it's no fun being out of work. Oh, I know. Anyways, I don't want to take up a lot of time on your voicemail, seeing how this call's long distance, and I'm not allowed to invoice anyone for it anymore. So, yeah, good to have you back on the air, and I'll be listening. I've got time, believe me. Oh, and by the way, if anyone asks, we did lunch last spring.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Mike O'Brien. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.